If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini, folks. This is Illini Guy Mike Kegley. I am here with Illini Guy Brad Sturdy and Illini Guy's Director of Recruiting, Kedrick Prince. And we are going to talk about the one that did not get away. That was the victory over Northwestern today. The Illini broke their streak of five losses on Super Sunday. They stopped that streak at five. They are now 6-7 as a program on Super Sunday. And it's nice to be back in the winning column again. Mr. Sturdy, you were right there courtside. What did you see? What pops out at you first and foremost in today's game?
I mean, obviously it was the play of RJ Melendez. He made some fantastic plays in the first half. And makes free throws down the stretch, really was the one guy in the wing that they could count on both ends of the floor. He also did a fantastic job on defense, really forcing them to take some tough shots and contesting them. There was one, I think the evening was, his play was typified. He's a freshman, so he's going to make some mistakes. He gets beat on a backdoor cut. And I asked Brad Underwood about it after the game. It basically is RJ in a nutshell. He can get beat. And he ends up coming back, recovering, and blocking the shot. Illinois doesn't have anybody like him, nobody with that level of athleticism. And you see him also run the floor. And I just thought he was spectacular today. And I think his minutes are going to continue to go up and up. And it really makes Illinois a stronger team down the stretch.
Yep, I totally agree with you. And Kedrick, I'm trying to think. There's somebody that was a big RJ fan who's been talking about him since day one. I'm trying to think who that was.
Me. Mike, I've been saying it. You know what? Here's why. I've said it before, and, I'm happy for the kid. And I tweeted it, and Brad just said it. There's nobody like that kid on the roster. He is, to me, at this level, man, you could be really good. You could be average. But you could be really good and be confident. I remember hearing Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods say that the sport that they play in is mostly is 80% mental. That kid just doesn't shy away from the moment. Look what he did defensively, the knockdown the shots, but how about down the stretch? This kid walks up to the free throw line and doesn't even hit the rim, and I heard some fan behind me yell, well, he's making shots because he doesn't know any better. Wrong. This kid is just tough. He is the future of the program. I can only imagine what others are seeing up there with him. And what was unique for me, what I saw today, I think there was a couple of times when Coach Underwood was going to pull him, and you could see all three assistant coaches tell Coach Underwood, nope, let's ride with him. It was really, really unique to see. I loved it. It's good for the kid, and he looks confident. Doesn't look like he's afraid. He's a different dimension to what they have, and moving forward, it just shows you how deep this team is. We've all talked about that all season, but now you can see these kids growing up.
Yeah, and Jacob Grandison had a rough game shooting, although he did hit the two free throws when it mattered. It's tough to go 0 for the game and then knock down two free throws in the last, the waning minutes of a game, but I was thought that was very apropos for him to at least come back with that. But one wonders, will we see Melendez? Is he going to be the spark coming off the bench? Or do you think he gets a shot at starting by the end of the season? Brad?
Oh, I see almost no chance that he's going to start. I just don't think that's what Underwood's going to do. You know, the thing we have to realize, the Illinois starting five is one of the most efficient five groups of five in the nation. They were one at one point. I think they're third now in plus minus when they're on the floor. Offensive and defensive efficiency. They are the best, you know, one of the best in the country. So I don't think you change that because somebody has a shooting slump or has a bad game. There's so much more to basketball than that. But having a guy like Melendez, and, you know, we've seen flashes from Goody. We've seen flashes from Budzimski. We saw great flashes from Coleman Hawkins today. I'm having that bench, and I even thought Omar Payne was really good today. He was a plus eight in 10 minutes. Yep. You know, had the dunk, did a key block. I thought, you know, they got some good minutes, and they're starting to develop. That depth has developed now, and now it's competition every day in practice. So I don't think starting lineup's going to change. But I'm telling you, they're going to play guys – fewer minutes because the other guys are producing more.
Yeah. Cad, what are your thoughts on the you know, how the minutes are being dispersed and what the bench play will allow to have happen?
There's no way you change. I'm really sorry. RJ could have scored 40 today, and to me, he would still come off the bench. You know, this group has won, you know, what, 11-3 in the conference right now, and, you know, they're one of the top, you know, 10, 15 teams in college basketball. One game doesn't make it, you know, like Brad said, make a decision for me where you want to bench a kid. Because at the end of the day, they're all, you know, they're not going to shoot well every day. They're not going to, you know, make free throws all the time. And it stinks. It's a part of basketball, but it's the little things. Like, we're sitting here talking about Jacob Granderson, but I believe he has 6 rebounds. I'm driving home, but I think he has 6 rebounds.
He did.
The other night, he didn't do that. You know, so to me, you look at the big picture, having guys like that come off the bench, because a lot of schools don't have that opportunity and that kind of firepower to come off the bench. I like what they have, and it was really good to see Coleman Hawkins get back on the court. I was kind of concerned, though. I don't know, Brad, maybe you know something about it. He had his – I saw, you know, during warm-ups, he had his back – he had a brace on, and I don't know if he's been injured or hurting or not, but I, you know, I don't know for sure. I guess we have to find that out, but – he was very, very productive today, and I'm really happy to see him, because when kids go into slumps, it's easy to throw them away and look for the next man up, like the quarterback. When the quarterback plays bad, you want the next guy. I mean, Coleman is sticking it out, and you can see whatever conversations he's had with the coaches is working, because he's been different the last few games.
Yeah, did you see anything, Brad, in terms of Hawkins with any type of injury or anything?
I mean, I think it's just – I mean, you go through this – I mean, it's like Kofi today at halftime was showing the coaches all the scrapes, and he was bleeding on his arms and from getting hit and swiped at. So I think it's just college basketball, you know. I mean, I go back to the days of when, you know, Mike Tisdale had to wear like a flak jacket to play. I mean, so when you're in the post, man, Coleman's playing that physical style. He gets beat up. He's not very strong yet. You know, he's not very physical, so – he probably has to wear that a little bit. He's probably taking some shots. I mean, just the fact you have to – if he has to guard Kofi a couple of times, that probably hurts your back.
Yeah, certainly would hurt an awful lot more than my back. Let's take a look at Kofi Coburn today. So the man ends up with 19 points, 15 rebounds. You know, 3 of those were offensive rebounds. I hear quite a bit of talking about the 6 turnovers he had, but I'm going to throw something out there to you that as a coach, I just don't like. And there was a couple times that he was on the baseline or the baseline extended, and the only guy open was in the other corner. And when you're double or triple team, that is a very hard pass to complete. I don't care if you're 7 foot. To me, I thought some of those turnovers were really where Northwestern kind of baited the trap, and by Illinois, you know, having guys be a little more passive, you know, kind of baited Kofi into some passes that probably weren't the wisest passes. I would have liked to seen somebody break into the basket and giving Kofi an angle and a good look that he could make a pass to him. Brad, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally agree. The one thing I think they tend to space the floor on Kofi so that they have to go one-on-one. The problem is, they were bringing help from different spots. They were digging and doing things. And I think Kofi was, he was a little bit struggled with decision-making there. And so he'd hold the ball a little too long and then he'd get trapped. But if there's a guy cutting down the lane, they have to take that away, which then would open up a rotation piece for a guy getting open. And I think their post action has to be a little better. And that's another example. I'll tell you, the best guy at post action is Coleman Hawkins. He's the best guy at cutting to the basket, which is weird because that used to be Jacob Grandison's forte when he was at Holy Cross. And so it was really cutting to the – he was great on basket cuts. And so I think he has to, instead of settling for jumpers, cut to the basket, because even if you're not open, it takes that defender. And what it does, it opens up the next shot. So I think that's an area where they can improve on. And they're going to watch film and they're going to see that, because I'm sure other teams are going to do the same type of deal where they're going to press him in. And here's the reality. If DeMonte makes it, he had like three wide open threes. Jacob Grandison had a couple, some wide open threes. If they make those shots, we're not even talking about the situation, because they're up 20 at plus at half and they're cruising to an easy win. And we're not really worried about the defense of Kofi. So I think that's one's just the next step for these guys is to, they got to make some shots and get back to shooting the way they were, back in December.
Yep. Ted, any thoughts on that or the overall turnover situation?
Yes, Mike, I'm glad you brought that up. I really am, because I mean, let's face it, let's call a spade a spade. Kofi's not a great passer. Here's my problem with what I saw today. I saw, and this is really immature to say on my part, but I know what I saw. And if you watch the game, you see it yourself. He was double and triple team. And I saw a bunch of college kids wave their hands in the air like bitty basketball players. How about cut to the basket? Great, you're not making shots. You're not making shots. I'm okay with that. But cut to the basket, because Brad's right. They baited him to throw on those passes, and he's not great at it. So shorten the passes instead of sitting there waving your hands looking for him to throw the ball across court. He's not great at it, but at least he's looking for it. So make it easier for the big fella. That's what I would have done from that standpoint. And if DeMonte wasn't making shots and Jacob Grandison, then you know what you do? You roll the dice and see what little good he's going to give you, or Brandon Pajemski at that point, because the guards just weren't, they weren't shooting them well today. And so you roll the dice to see how that works out. And if not, then they get to the rim. I just think Kofi, I don't know if the TV view showed it, and Brad Underwood said it about the scratches and bruises. I'm telling you, I've seen this kid play basketball games, and you can hear the language. Kofi was really mad today at getting pushed and grabbed. And sometimes the TV angles don't show it, and it's too bad. He is frustrated, and I don't know what the official told Coach Underwood. They're trying. He's a hard guy to officiate, because every time they call a foul on him, the opposing coaches are complaining the entire time because they know he's getting fouled. So what do you do as an official? Because realistically, and Coach Underwood's right, if he's getting fouled, you got to call it. But then the opposing teams don't want to foul every time down the court, which isn't Illinois' problem. But I know one of those guys told him that it's hard to officiate him.
Yeah, no, that's clear. Go ahead, Brad.
There are two things I would add to that. An official told Underwood earlier in the year that if the ball Kofi brings the ball down, they're not going to call a foul down there when it's down low. I mean, yeah, he might get hit on the arms, but we're not going to call that. And secondly, the official told Underwood today, said we could basically call a foul every possession because he gets fouled every time. And so when you hear those two things, and you're like, it doesn't seem like he is officiated the same way as every other human being. So it's not right. You shouldn't be penalized because you're bigger and stronger than everyone else.
Exactly right. Coach Underwood said that once. I mean, he made a reference. Who cares if he can bench press the State Farm Center? A foul's a foul, and you got to call it, because you can see the frustration on his face. Today was the first time I thought, you know what, I don't want to wish the season away because it's an enjoyable season to cover. But maybe in the postseason it may be different for the guy. They can get a, they can string together a couple games. It's hard watching him get hit like that, because in the back of my mind, I keep thinking about Dale Brown the entire time, telling Shaq, go to the league, go play, go make money before you get hurt. And then it's really weird. Watch the facial expressions of some of these kids who are following him. You can see it. He's playing his day, and they act like they're not following him. I just think he's beat up, and I think he's worn down a little bit. But something has to be done, and maybe it won't happen because this is his third year. But it's not right. A foul's a foul. I don't care if it's the first second of the game, last second of the game, or right before halftime. You got to call it.
Yeah, and that's just frustrating to watch him, because I haven't seen him get that mad since his freshman year. And I've seen him take plenty of hits. And, you know, you just don't want to see somebody, because, again, at some point, he's a better human being than most of us, because most of the fans, if you got hit as much as he did, we'd probably start throwing elbows, et cetera. And he doesn't do that. But boy, that has to be frustrating. The other thing I wanted to ask about, just watching the game, it seemed like Curbelo was – I want to say that, you know, he was kind of like – at times it seemed like he was just a little out of focus. Like, you know, he would take the extra dribble. He would go into a crowd where they could reach on him and tip the ball away. Just some stuff that, you know, he does it occasionally, but seemed to do it more often today, as if he was, like I said, just a little bit of out of focus or not altogether there as much. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, we actually Brad Underwood addressed that post game, and it's one of those things where you have to figure out what you're going to do with him. He's going to make some turnovers,
yep,
but he also makes some plays that no one else can make. I thought his, you know, transition bucket was huge, and then I thought there was a situation where, you know, three times where he tried to split a ball screen, and yep, it wasn't there. There wasn't an angle to split it, and, you know, instead of just using the ball screen and creating there where he could, I think that was, you know, and I think if he uses those ball screens, it does create some openings for the lobs and kickouts and things like that. So, it's just little things where he's got to get a little better at that. And I think he also tries to, you know, he's playing fewer minutes. And I know he sprained his ankle yesterday in practice and so forth, but he's playing a little fewer minutes. I think he's still trying to make too many home run plays, if that makes sense. And that's where you have to, you know, kind of rein him in, because if you can get him to make the singles and doubles, I think you're going to have a better situation, better, you know, efficiency from him. And that's where he was last year. At the end of the year, he kind of had developed that, and he hasn't had that. And the people are saying he hasn't had game experience this year much. Yep. I mean, you know, he's playing limited minutes, and they're defending him differently than were a year ago. So it's a learning process. Even though he's a sophomore, he's going to learn. And you also, you know, playing with, you know, they're using Trent a lot more in the ball screen situations. And so he's playing a kind of a different role. And there are some things that they're going to do that you're going to see as he gets better. He's going to be a key part of this team, because also defensively, he's an upgrade over, say, Alfonso Plummer. So if he's, you know, effective on offense, now you can be even better, you know, defensively.
No, I totally understand that. There was a Plummer moment or two tonight, no doubt, although thankfully he did come through with some timely 3-point shooting. Ked, anything that we didn't cover on the whole turnover Curbelo type of subject?
I just would like to see him be mature enough to know in the first half early, he went between his legs to split, you know, the double team coming. I think that's great. But I would like to see, and turnovers are part of the game, is him knowing the time and game situation. When is the time to make that home run play? And when is the time, you know, to do the squeeze play? Don't try to be that one guy and cause the turnovers, because, I mean, he played limited minutes, and I know we have 4 turnovers. And those 4 turnovers, they came at a crucial time in the game. I want to see that growth from him, and to not shoulder and think that he has to do it all by himself. Him handling the basketball and him making the basic pass that a lot of kids can't, a lot of players on the team can't make, makes him better and makes the team better. I just wish I would see that growth from him, and maybe it's because he's not had a lot of time on the court, but he's played enough basketball, too, where there shouldn't be an issue with him. You got to take the good with the bad, and that's just the way it's going to be. And I give Coach Underwood credit. Once he was going to yank him out, he left him in there. And when I see Coach do stuff like that, he's a player's coach, because a lot of coaches will yank him, I mean, in a heartbeat. But I have to say, at the very next time down the court, he can do something spectacular to get it back. So you got to ride with him. Hopefully he'll develop it. I want to see them continue to win. This is a tough stretch for everybody. Everybody in the conference, you look at the scores all over, you just got to win, guys.
Yeah, yeah, and
Go ahead, talking about Underwood pulling guys. It's pretty funny that at the end of the game, was there about a minute and a half to go? Trent gets the steal and he's going in. He could have taken the layup probably or gotten fouled. Instead, he hits Plummer, drops it off to Plummer for the pull-up three. And the weird part is, and this kind of shows you where the mentality is, they're mad at Trent for not taking the layup and also not just keeping the ball, right?
Yeah.
But because they're not even mad at Plummer because they know that if Alfonso's open, he's shooting it. It doesn't matter the game time score situation. If he's open for three, man, it's going up. So it kind of gives you, they didn't yell at him. They yelled at Trent for giving him the ball. So this is, it's like, I almost felt like I was coaching like high school again, where it's like, no, don't give him the ball in that situation. Keep the ball, you know? So it's a different animal, but yeah, I think it's fun to watch those. You know, Brad was, you know, he gets, you see him on the sideline. He gets pretty mad when they make those kind of mental mistakes, more so than the physical, you know, the missed shots and things. But I thought that was pretty entertaining to watch that.
Yeah, the other thing, I've rarely seen a game that's like a tale of two cities from the three-point line. You know, Illinois was 56% in the first half and then shot a blistering 7% in the second half. You just don't see that type of like the they're on fire and then they go from heat miser to cold miser. You know, in the break, you know, over the half. So whatever coach said about 3-point shooting at halftime, never say that again. Have you seen a game that went that hot and cold, Brad, in a while?
Well, our high school game yesterday, but other than that, it's a strange animal sometimes. I mean, shooting, it's just, I think that the problem you have is once they miss they started the second half. I mean, they decided we're going to basically dot DeMonte and we're going to help from his guy and we're going to make him beat us from three. And he took like three or four threes right in a row, you know, like wide open and he missed them. So, okay. Well then now you start thinking, you know, and Grandison had missed shot poorly in the first half. And the only shots Plummer was getting, they were closed out differently than him. So he's getting tough on the move, you know, threes, you know, late shot clock. The weird part is the one thing I do want to kind of talk about with that is I Trent Frazier took what, one shot in the second half. He shot an air ball from 15 footer. And he just, you know, they were the way they were defending him, he had some chances to shoot that pull up three that he loves to shoot. And when they'd go under that screen, he just even going to his left, which is like his go to move, and he didn't do it. So I don't know whether it was like just he wasn't feeling it or whether he just did. It was strange, I thought, because, you know, there have been so many games this year where Trent has really kind of opened that game up with some of those threes and late, you know, whether it was Indiana, whether it's Maryland the first time, whatever it was. So there's been some games where he's lit it up. And so I thought it was interesting that he wasn't necessarily poor shooting. It was not unwillingness to shoot, I guess.
Yeah, and he's also had that 3-point air ball thing now for about three games in a row, which is a little bit of a new thing that I'd like to have that get out of the system now. Ted, did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's becoming obvious. I think right now, I mean, Trent would never say it, and I know coaches wouldn't either because it's a mental thing, but, I mean, he looks to me to be gun-shy a little bit. And to me, the way to get out of it is when you have a lead like that, pull up and shoot one of those or get to the basket, you know, get a layup to go down and get a couple of free throws to go down. I was glad to see him at the end of the game. He'll walk up to the line and shoot free throws. You know, everybody goes through it. And to be honest with you, I'd rather see it right now. And I know that sounds kind of weird because you're fighting for a Big Ten title right now.
Yep.
Than in the tournament, you know, get hot when it matters in the tournament, because in order for this team to win, They have all the weapons. Let's just say what it is. They have all the weapons to win a Final Four. Whether they click at the same time or not, we don't know. We need Carmelo, or they need Carmelo to be clicking at the right time. They need Trent to get those shots off the dribble and attack. You know, they need Kofi to put up 23 and get 15 rebounds, and DeMonte to do what he does. So it's there. I mean, it really and truly is, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But long term, and there's not a lot of games left. There's not a lot left. Hopefully they can put this all together before it's too late.
Yeah, no, that yeah, obviously getting all these guys clicking at the same time is part of the Rubik's Cube that is being a coach. And I know I used to tell kids, if you want to get your three-pointer back on track, the best thing to do is get a layup. And they would look at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, look, just get a layup, get a couple easy shots, and you'd be surprised how confident you'll be next time your feet are, you know, behind the three-point line. And it usually worked. Brad, any final thoughts on the game? Because I know this was, this was one of those games that Illinois was supposed to win, just like Purdue was supposed to win today. And Purdue had really, they had their shot clock force the refs to stop a play. Purdue then had an inbounds, and they tried to do the bring somebody across the end line and pass to them. But once the ball's been stopped like that, you can't do it. And Maryland ended up with 8 seconds to go and ended up with the ball underneath their own basket with an opportunity to, you know, to score. And to be honest, there was a little bit of contact that wasn't called on the shot, and Purdue ends up winning. So if you're a Purdue fan, you're an Illinois fan today, you were hoping for a blowout, but you got to win. And to me, that's a good thing. But what did you take away from the game?
Well, you reach a point in the season where there's no, like, yeah, you want to be clicking on all cylinders, but you just got to win. I mean, Illinois has 6 games left. They win all 6 games, they're Big Ten champs. They win 5 of 6, they're Big Ten champs. I mean, it's just that simple. And so that's where they're at. I mean, that's where you've got to be. I think, I'll be honest with you, I think if they win 4 of 6, they're probably getting a share as Big Ten champs. So these are things where you just got to go out and win the game. There's no – we don't get style points right now. You just win. The one thing that people have to understand is college basketball, the Big Ten, is a grind. You're not going to be your best every day. You're going to have – and we've talked about this before on the pod. You might have 10 games a year where you're clicking, and then you have 10 games a year when you are just okay, and maybe 10 games a year where you really struggle. And you find a way to win. Today it was more like a tale of two halves. So they're really good in the first half, really bad in the second half. But again, you win. And if Illinois wins, you know, going forward, they're going to be Big Ten champs. They control their own destiny. Just win the games. The one thing I think the Rutgers game, you know, how about when if you win at Rutgers, you're in a situation where you got 3 home games left out of 5, and you are now. I mean, and you go 3-2 and win those 3 home games, you know, you're in a really good place. You know, so Rutgers is a huge game for Illinois. And I know they beat them by like 35 the first time they played, but this is a different Rutgers team playing a lot better right now. And they're at the rack where they are tough to beat. But I'm really looking forward to see what Illinois can muster against the Scarlet Knights.
The same here, Brad. Kat, I'm going to let you close out your part of this.
Well, at this stage and juncture in the season, whether you win by 15 or win by 1 like Maryland did today, at the end of the day, you look at the win-loss column, it doesn't say how many points. It's about winning and surviving. They control their own destiny. It would be nice to see them win this Big Ten tournament. I mean, excuse me, this Big Ten championship. They deserve it. And to me, if they win it, even if they share it, I think Coach Underwood deserves Coach of the Year, putting pieces together. People are going to say, oh, he should have won because we have Kobe Corburn. Well, same thing can be said about Matt Painter because he has an All-American on his roster, same with Iowa with Keegan Murray. It's about surviving. You know, people are tweeting at me right now, oh, how dare Coach Underwood lose an 18-point lead? It's a grind. You have to look at the big picture, guys. These other coaches, Brad Underwood's not the only coach in the Big Ten who scouts. I sit there press row right next to Brad, and you can hear opposing coaches calling plays. They're good. The Coach Underwood mentioned it millions of times. The X's and O's and the details that these coaches are accustomed to and the players and the scouting reports, it's a lot. It's very, very detailed. It's so detailed to where there's guys that dribble. Like, people may not realize this. Alfonso Plummer shoots better with the hand in his face than without it. And people may not realize that. He makes you better going left to right than people realize. So having said that, win the game. It doesn't matter how ugly they are. I don't care if they win with 4 players on the court when they play Rutgers. You got to get the W. And they know what's at stake. They really do. So enjoy it, you know. And there's going to be some, you know, there'll be some more bumps. But like last week, when you got beat by Purdue went to Michigan and got blown out. So you're going to get some help. No one's probably going to go undefeated looking at the remaining schedule. That's my take.
Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you, gentlemen. We really appreciate having you guys on. In a few minutes, we will transfer over to Matt Stevens, but wanted to thank everybody for listening to this podcast. Of course, you can listen to Sturdy for 30. That's Brad's award-winning podcast that he has, probably the flagship podcast for IlliniGuys.com. Of course, Ked has Ked's Recruiting Roundup, which is a unique view at recruiting from the side of the recruits and the families and how they are, and the coaches who are on the other side of the table from the collegiate coaches doing the recruiting. We also have IlliniGuys.com. You can subscribe, free 7-day trial, $99 a year. It is a great value. And if you want to know all about recruiting, you'll definitely want to read that. And of course, Ked and Brad are going to have stories over the next few days about visitors who were at the game today. And folks, it's exciting. So you will definitely want to be there for that. Subscribers obviously get the recruiting inside information first, and they get it for themselves to, you know, go through and read, break apart. And of course, on the message boards, not only can you read these things, but you can go back and forth with Brad and Ked and actually ask questions of the guys who are closest to the situation. By the way, you don't have to worry about going anywhere else because nobody covers Illini recruiting like Brad and Ked. And finally, listen to Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. That is our radio experience that you can hear 2 hours a week on Fridays and Saturdays. Go to the IlliniGuys.com, check out the radio button, and look at where around the state you can hear it. All the stations are listed there and what time they have it on. Tune in. We promise you, you will have a good time. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate your guys' time. And here we are on our Illini Guys Iridium satellite phone. We've got Matt Stevens, who is calling in from the bowels of the State Farm Center. Matt, we had an interesting tale of two halves type of game. What was your big takeaway, or what jumped out at you most based on what you saw today?
That if Illinois doesn't have RJ Melendez on its roster, they don't win the ballgame. And it's interesting to say that about somebody who's got the 11th most minutes on the roster. But today it basically became true, because you didn't get much out of Jacob Granderson on either end of the floor. You got a lot out of DeMonte on the defensive end of the floor, but he went 2 for 7 from three. And so Northwestern just stopped guarding him. And, you know, I tend to be the guy on this staff that, you know, reminds everybody that there are two ends of the floor in basketball. And I don't really worry about this team offensively all that much. And I don't know if a whole lot of people ought to either. But RJ Melendez gives you something on both ends of the floor, and he did today. And my concern is that I think what you saw in Evanston also with RJ is encouraging. But I sometimes wonder if this matchup for RJ is just perfect for him and where he is in his development right now, because Northwestern just doesn't have an athletic wing that can handle him. But I don't know how much you can go forward with him. You know, we're now into the third week of February, guys, and I don't know how much you can rely on him, because Illinois needs Jacob Granderson to be better on both ends of the floor, and they need DeMonte to be able to knock down shots when the opportunity presents itself. I don't think RJ Melendez playing 15 minutes a night is going to get Illinois where it needs to go. And so you're able to get through this one. You got 6 more to a Big Ten title. But I think that Illinois has an active future ahead of itself with the three freshmen that have at some point during the year helped them get through games that seemed a little bit dark and dreary. But I think they need a lot more out of the veterans right now that they're not getting. And so the present looks a little bit shaky right now in a win, but I think the future looks pretty bright with what they've been able to put on the floor.
Yeah, it was a frustrating moment to see Grandison struggle so much, and then also the same thing with DeMonte in the second half. Curbelo had a good game in terms of he seemed to be a little better on defense, but the turnovers were big today. Now, he hasn't had much practice and he hasn't had much playing time this year, but hopefully they can get him on track and see if they can get that Curbelo of the end of last year's Big Ten season. But yeah, that may be asking an awful lot.
Yeah, Mike, I understand that you're asking a lot out of a dude like that. Quite frankly, if Andre Curbelo is going to play like that, he doesn't need to be on the floor, period. One of the major reasons is that a lot of the time today, Illinois played 6-on-4 because Andre Curbelo was playing for Northwestern. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, he's a double agent. Sometimes he'll play for the other team. And when he does that, you have to get him off the floor. And I thought Brad did a really good job of realizing that Andre had his head somewhere on another planet today and got him off the floor. And I know that it involves probably playing Trent Frazier 35 plus minutes, but you got to get him off the floor. And quite frankly, Mike, if we're going to go down the list, I thought you got a D-plus performance out of Kofi Coburn today. I really did. I really think that Jeff Alexander, in a win, which is usually a good way to do this, really needs to show Kofi how long he is waiting in the post for something to happen when he gets handed the basketball, when he gets thrown the basketball. That's a major concern. I think in January he was doing a really, really good job of immediately putting something together from a move standpoint to avoid the instant double team, or at least when the double team came, it was coming too late. He sat there in the post today with the basketball with no purpose or plan whatsoever and allowed Northwestern to do exactly what they wanted to do defensively on the dude and allowed Illinois to get back in the ballgame. So I thought you got a D-plus performance out of Kofi Coburn, and I think he knows it. I think you got a pretty failing performance out of Andre Curbelo, and you got a failing performance, obviously, out of Jacob Granderson, and you still won the ballgame. So I think that there's a lot to be said for what film's going to look like on Monday with this team coming out of a win, but I think it's concerning when you're going to play a lot more talented and a lot more hungry teams in these last six games you play in the season. But I think that Illinois can respond, and I think the best way you do that is in a film review type deal during a win instead of still feeling like crud after a loss kind of a thing. So
exactly.
That's where I kind of sit with it, is that Illinois kind of survived a game today where I felt like Trent played really, really well on defense. DeMonte played really, really well on defense. And you got offensively what you need out of Alfonso Plumber. And you got a spectacular performance out of RJ Melendez coming off the bench. And that's why you were able to beat a Northwestern team that just doesn't have enough bullets in its gun to beat a team like Illinois on the road.
Yeah, I do think they've got to figure out the movement on the offense, because when Kofi is getting double or triple teamed, and we're finding out that when he gets hacked, he's just going to have to live with it. And it caused him some frustration today. But ultimately, players standing in the corner where a guy can't throw you the ball, you may be quote open, and I've got my air quotation marks there. But if you're not at an angle that a player can get you the ball, you're not open, and they've got to get some movement where when the double team comes, that there are guys going to the open spots on the floor, typically somewhere within the lane. Now, where you want to flash in the lane and how you want to move to the basket depends on what kind of, what particular play or offense you're running. But right now, to stand in the corner with my hand up is something that I would, expect out of a lesser squad. And in fact, that those become the kind of passes that aren't open, but they bait a player into throwing the pass, because Kofi literally had to put a 90 mile an hour pass at about 10.5 feet up in the air to get that ball across, you know, especially when he was on the baseline to the other baseline, you know, in the corner. I'd like to see a little more movement out of the players when they're off ball. And I think that'll help an awful lot of the offense, because then the defense is there's, it's much harder to guard people when they're moving than when they're stationary, wherever they're at on the floor.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I also think that there are diagonal passes that you can make. And there also is an ability that I found it weird that Northwestern just lets Kofi, you know, I mean, they weren't really contesting the entry pass all that much.
Well, they didn't have to.
Right. And so, and the reason for that is, but if they're not doing that, guess what? Kofi's got somebody on his butt. And that's why Jeff Alexander, and I know he'll do this, he'll go to Kofi and go, before you receive that pass, you got to know what you're going to do. You got to have a plan. Because if you're going to sit in the post for 2 seconds, guess what? That's exactly what Northwestern wants you to do. Because it's either going to be a turnover or it's going to be a shot that, you know, is not a high percentage shot for Kofi. And that's what they want him to do. And so he kind of fell into a lull of doing exactly, I thought, what Northwestern wanted them to do, and especially what Ryan Young wanted him to do, on a night where I thought Kofi could have gotten, you know, 35 and 20 tonight if he'd had a plan in the post. I don't think that Northwestern had any plan to stop him unless they could get the double, you know, unless the double could get there on time. And I just didn't feel like Northwestern's double was happening immediately. I just felt like they were waiting for Kofi to do something. And then, you know, Kofi was waiting for something. And then that allowed Northwestern to attack him on defense instead of Kofi attacking. And then the other thing is I didn't see the ball screen action with Kofi that I think allows him to at least get set where he wants to receive the ball. So there was no on ball movement. There wasn't any meaning like ball screen action. There wasn't any off ball movement. And then I felt like, you know, Illinois defensively got lulled into exactly what Northwestern wanted them to do in the second half. And that was basically to, you know, get better looks for their outside shooters. And that's concerning, but you know, you don't have to play great to beat everybody in the league, especially when you're at home. And Illinois kind of proved that today.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the other part is I think Northwestern did a good job of bringing the double team from different places, making it a little bit harder for him to figure out exactly where it was coming from. And again, I it goes back a lot to what you said a few weeks ago, where you just they don't know how to referee big guys. And you know, you could hear even on TV some of the slapping. And it was amazing because and this is what I've talked about for quite some time, but you get a physically dominant player like that and the referees call a couple fouls early, but then they're like, I can't call a foul every time down the court. And then you have some players who are like, that's cool, because I'm going to do it every time down the court. And Kofi's going to have to figure out that before that ball gets up, he's going to have to figure out how to do something with it, because they're not going to call that. And he's got to get an adjustment to understand that. And I think this was the first time I've seen him this frustrated since his freshman year.
Yeah. I don't understand that. Kofi's been in this league for 3 years. I understand.
I don't think we've seen a team go after the ball down low this hard. If you go back and watch the film,
they have told Kofi since the middle of his sophomore year, and they basically told Illinois, and the coaches know this, if he brings the ball below his waist or at his waist, they are not going to call a foul. They're just not going to call a reach-in foul. And they've told Matt Painter that when Zach Edey used to do it last year. They've told Matt Painter that when Trevion Williams does it, they're not going to call anything. They've told that to Juwan Howard when Hunter Dickinson does it. Do not bring the ball down to your waist. We are not going to call reach-in stuff on that. I get Brad Underwood defending his player and having his back, and I would do the same thing if I were him. But that has been an edict that has been told to all those dudes, and yet Kofi Coburn, and I've seen Hunter Dickinson do it, and I've seen Trevion Williams do it, because he's kind of a perimeter guy for them, because I think he's the best passer on Purdue's roster. Kofi continues to bring the ball down below his waist. knowing that that's going to happen. And this is the first, yeah, you're right. This is the first time I've seen him get agitated like that. And I think it was very, very mature of him to walk in there and say, hey, look, that's the first time that's happened in a while, and I need to stop doing that.
I think as a human being, you know, the contact down low was more than it has been in quite a few, in as many games as I've seen. Now, the one thing that I thought Northwestern did probably a better job of anybody is they did not do a lot up in the air against Kofi, which I thought was smart. But they did get it, like I said, when they were going all low. I don't know that he's seen somebody with the discipline to go after it every single time. And I think he got tired of it. And then, like I said, if you get a couple cuts and stuff like that, it just
yeah. I think the ball movement also would have helped, and I think that there's a lot of things that would have helped. I'm not going to throw this on that crew. And just like Underwood said today, it's that 3-man crew was a pretty good crew. And I know for a fact that Underwood would take that 3-man crew 6 more times if he could get it for the rest of this regular season. It's not a crew issue. Like, they have told Brad Underwood, look, if we wanted to call a foul every time down the floor on somebody guarding Kofi, we could, but there would be nobody left in the basketball game. Like,
no, I get it. And it's unfortunate, you know, you can't say that about any other person in the Big Ten. And it's unfortunate that he gets games called differently. And that means he's under pressure to stay calm and cool when you and I wouldn't have to, because we wouldn't get that treatment. And, you know, he gets it not because of his skin color, but because he's bigger and stronger than everybody. And ultimately, you know, what you run into as a league is you have to figure out, you know, how you're going to call it for the quality of the game. And you have to realize that these are 20, 22-year-old kids, and they're going to have tempers. And at some point, you know, you may end up putting a kid in a bad position, or putting a kid eating something that he's not going to want to eat, which is, you know, again, you don't want to do that. But if you're going to call the game a certain way, there's going to be implications from it.
And yeah, I just feel like, Mike, doing quick math, because I'm terrible at it, like, there are 70 players. 14 times 5 is 70. There's 70 players that start on Big Ten rosters this year. And I feel like 3 or 4 of them have to deal with this. Zach Edey has to deal with it, and Hunter Dickinson has to deal with it. And there's probably one more that I'm missing, but that's the, you know, and that's but on the same level, like, that's, you know, they know the deal. Like, I mean,
no, like I said, at some point they're kids, and you're going to get a reaction.
I'm just acknowledging that yes, it was. Out of character for Kofi to do that.
And this team was down low more than most teams, because they brought in 3 guys and they said, well, if you're not going to call a foul, then we're going to go in there and grab and we'll get the turnovers, and there won't be and then I think the referees did start towards the end of the game, start calling a little bit of that, which I think evened out the frustration level a little bit, which I think was probably good. Well,
and to his credit too, I think –
Kofi took a timeout and calmed himself down.
Right, and I don't think it was a big deal, but I also want to point out that for 3 years now, Kofi Coburn has had his whatever he wants to have. He's basically like he has been the nightmare for Ryan Young for 3 years, and I mean, I've seen it. I've said it in Evanston too. Like he might as well, Ryan Young might as well have Kofi tattooed on his butt.
Yeah,
because he's just had his way with Ryan Young for 3 years. Today, I felt like Chris Collins realized, okay, Pete Nance cannot guard Kofi Coburn.
Yeah.
So I have to basically kind of timeshare this now, 2020. And Ryan Young decided, look, if Kofi's going to get 19 and 15, which is what he got today, he's going to have to really earn it. Like, I'm not going to let him get dunks, and I'm not going to let him posterize me, and I'm not going to let him bully me all day long today. So to his credit, I thought Ryan Young played the best game he's ever played against Kofi. And Kofi still got 19 and 15 because he's a mountain of a human being, and there's nothing you can do about it. And he knows that. And Ryan Young knows that. But I did think you got a less than average effort out of Kofi today because of his frustration. And also because there are things that like the professional people have wanted to see out of Kofi for a long time, which is when you get the ball like that, you know, 2 points needs to happen. And there's a lot of times that 2 points doesn't happen. And then also there were diagonal passes that should have and could have been made out of the post today. And go watch what Trevion Williams is able to do in Purdue's offense if you want to see somebody pass out of the post the way that you're supposed to and at an elite level. Kofi's still developing that skill set. And I think teams are starting to realize that when you bring the double and even maybe the triple over there. And the basketball IQ today just wasn't real high out of Illinois. Let's just be real about it. And they were able to get away with it because they're super athletic, especially with RJ on the floor. And they were able to get away with a lot of things. They were able to get away with turning it over 20 times today. But I thought you got an elite effort out of Trent Frazier on defense because Bo Bowie is, what, 3 of 13 today or something?
The shooting of the guards, I mean, yes. Let's face it, they you know, with a little bit of basketball IQ from the Northwestern guards, they could have put a little bit of pressure on.
Sure, and I think – but I also think you won this game on the defensive end of the floor mostly because
– I agree.
You sure weren't putting it on. But honestly, like in the third week of February, I expect Illinois to win some games like this. And so yeah. It's not going to be beautiful basketball. And quite frankly, Northwestern – wasn't going to allow this game to be beautiful basketball if they had any chance to win the game. And it looked very much in the second half like the pace of play and the style of play favored them significantly. So, but you're able to survive just like Purdue did today at home against Maryland. Illinois survived against Northwestern, and you keep just recording victories and I think trying to get to the magical number of 15. And so if you can get to the magical number of 15 conference wins, you'll probably be in the line for a conference championship, regular season conference championship. And Illinois is on the way to get there. And I think going to the rack is going to be a really, really difficult game. And it's why I think, you know, you're going to need Jacob Granderson in that game. You're going to need DeMonte Williams in that game. You may even need Coleman Hawkins in that game. And you need Andre Carbello to give you something that's not Rutgers approved in that game.
This is the template for games that you're going to see down the stretch now because it's
exactly
gonna,
right.
It's going to be a slog. I agree.
I think that's got to be a concerning game for Illini fans. But what you did get today was, and what I wrote about in the feature on Illini guys, you got a electrifying performance out of a freshman that I think is going to be really, really good starting next year. The guy that you're going to have to rely on starting next year. And I think that, you know, the 11th most minutes played guy today essentially was the X factor to why you won a Big Ten game today. And so that's always nice to have again in the third week of February.
Yeah. I got a freshman with no fear. It's kind of a fun thing to watch. And yep. Next year we'll have a set of wings like Illinois probably hasn't had since the Flying Illini, which will also make them entertaining to watch. But I don't want to wish that away, this team away. We got a lot of basketball left. Mm-hmm. Any other final thoughts before we go out and let everybody know that we're going to be watching the Super Bowl, so we're trying to wrap this up for that.
Yeah, I think you got, again, he's not going to put it on the board. Culture win. This was a culture win. You got an elite defensive performance out of Trent Frazier and an elite defensive performance out of DeMonte Williams. And so they contributed. And the other thing I want to point out, and I don't know if Kat or Brad had pointed this out, but maybe they did. You got some kind of contribution out of Coleman Hawkins today. No, he didn't score. No, he didn't put any points on the board today. But Coleman Hawkins contributed. He very much contributed to why you won this basketball game today. And if they can get Coleman Hawkins to understand that on a day where he didn't score a point, he was highly contributive to why they won, then he'll be a very, very productive player for Illinois for the next few years. And if they can get him to get into that mindset, because Trent's in that mindset and DeMonte's in that mindset. And quite frankly, Jacob Granderson's in that mindset when he actually sits down and defends on the wing, which he did not do today, but on a night where he goes 0-for-7, he could have contributed something. Coleman Hawkins did. And I was really, really pleased with what he was able to give them off the bench. So I thought the bench was really good, minus Carbello going to Looney Town again and trying to help Northwestern cover the spread. And other than that, though, I thought out of Coleman Hawkins and RJ Melendez and even Omar Payne, I thought they gave you something today off the bench. Yep, that was productive. I think that Illinois is going to need that.
Yeah, I think the bench played pretty good today. And even I'll give Grandison credit, you know, if you're going to make two shots, they're nice when they're free throws in the last minute or two of the game. Yep. You know, that's hard to go 0 for the game and then go 2 for 2 down the stretch, but he did do that. So with that, folks, we are going to let you go ahead and go. We will be back on Wednesday night, and one of the most dangerous games of the year on the road at Rutgers against a team that is more talented than they're given credit for, and probably more dangerous than even the Illini coaches want to admit. And they see a lot of danger in this Rutgers team. So we will look to see everybody or talk to everybody on Tuesday night. Thank you very much, and go Illini.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.